good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sickman. With me is Benjamin Solak, joining you guys on a Fan Friday edition of the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I'm very excited for this, and of course, you guys stepped up as you do every single week, sending in your crazy questions. A lot of great football questions this week. We have some nice off-the-wall ones that are going to, I don't want to say throw a wrench into it, but get us off topic a little bit, let us have a little bit of fun. But the football questions specifically, I feel like the good people, the allies of the pod, really stepped up this week, Ben.
It's trade deadline time.
Right.
And whenever we get the trade deadline time,
right,
things start to get, just for a brief flash, 1 week, 2 week, it's like, oh, I wonder what Ben and Trevor think about football.
Right.
And then after that, it's like, nah, I don't care anymore about what they say.
I was going to say, for some reason, people want to open up our imaginations, which is a terribly scary place. But you guys always want to do this every time trade deadline comes around. So we oblige. We'll be glad to open up the imagination. We'll get to some crazy places here on this podcast. Before we do, we got a message from our friends over at Pepsi. They're reminding us that this football season is going to be different, and Pepsi is here to get us ready for game day no matter how we watch this season. Pepsi is the refreshment that you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels each and every week, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Ben, if you are ready to go, we are starting out with one of those hypothetical, crazy imagination football questions. You ready to do this?
Yeah, let's hit it, man.
Darren asked this one. I believe this is from Instagram. I think. Could be from the premium Slack. I forgot to write down exactly what it was from, but it was from somewhere. He said, question for you and Ben on Fan Friday. If the Dallas Cowboys continue to stink, high chance of that happening, and are picking in the top five, do you think they would be willing to select a quarterback to move on from Dak Prescott, given the amount of money that they have left on their cap could be going elsewhere? I can see this coming to a reality if Dak hits the open market, and I truly see him going to a team like the Saints with Breeze retiring. Okay, we could tackle the second half of this question and where he might be going, but what do you think about this? Because this is kind of a topic that's floated around and people have presented it, but because we are not at that moment yet, it's not quite a manifested fear of Dak no longer being on the Dallas Cowboys. But what do you think? Is this imminent? Is this much more of a danger than we're actually putting forth the effort for right now?
Yes. Yeah. Like, this is important. Because it's a very emotional thing. It's a very, about how humans make decisions here. Because should the Cowboys draft a quarterback? No. They have Dak. He's a good quarterback. They should pay him. Boom. Decision's done. But that's not how people work. And it's one thing to say Dak's our quarterback long term. And then it's another thing to say we want Dak to be our quarterback long term. Obviously, we want him to recover, and we need to make sure that he's healthy. And when he comes back healthy, we're very confident he's going to come back healthy. He's going to be our quarterback long term. Mm-hmm. And then it's another thing to say the cap is lower for 2021, probably be lower for 2022, and Dak's going to be coming back from injury. And after we see that Dak is healthy, and we're going to have to meet with him, and we're going to have to discuss how to keep his 2021 cap figured out, but Dak's going to be our quarterback long term. See what I'm saying? So there's like steps you got to go through here. You have
You're
to
right.
Dak's
yeah,
injured
no doubt.
Now, and you have the 2021 cap. So this is not neat. This is not tidy. And then, so into that mess, into that nonsense, throw in the fourth overall draft pick. And you're sitting there, Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, potentially a new head coach. And you have a quarterback who you played with him for 4 years. You know how many playoff games Cowboys have won under Dak? One. I think. Yeah. One.
I was going to guess zero. So you saying one is one more game than I was going to guess.
Okay. They lost in the divisional round in 2018. Did they have a bye? I think they did, because they were 10-6 and they won the division that year.
Okay. All right.
Let's take a look.
I did not think that Dak had a playoff win.
Yeah.
Don't the Cowboys have like a super long streak?
I knew they made the playoffs once. Okay. They beat the Seattle Seahawks in the wild card round 24-22. So they have, they're 1-1 in the playoffs under Dak.
Okay. So, all right. Boom. So he does have a win. I almost robbed Dak of a win. So it's good that we did this. I'm sorry, Dak. I am. Obviously, Dak listens to the pod. He's an ally of the pod. So I'm sorry, Dak.
Now, of course, as everybody knows, the Cowboys have not made it beyond the divisional round since 1995, which is my favorite stat in history. Right. But anyway, you have Dak, who, when you drafted Dak in the fourth round, you weren't like, this is going to be our franchise guy for the next 10 years. You were like, maybe this dude can develop into something. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up being your starter for 4 years, and you're good, and Dak's good. But with that fourth overall pick, you start looking not just at Penei Sewell, not just at Michael Parsons. You start looking at Justin Fields. You're still looking at Trey Lance. And those guys look like franchise changers, baby. Those are potential top five picks of quarterback. And that means something different. Because once you get the top five pick, Trevor, you no longer get to say, we're signing Dak long-term. Dak is our quarterback. He's been our quarterback. He's our guy. Now you have to actively choose to pass on Justin Fields to sign Dak Prescott. And I think you should. But that's a harder decision to make. That's a lot tougher. And so this is a very real thing. And it's going to come, you know, I wrote about it this week. It's going to come into further and further clarity. It will become more and more crystalline the more and more the Cowboys lose. It's like Arizona with Josh Rosen a couple years ago. Okay, Josh Rosen's playing bad, but they're going to develop him. But the closer they got to that number one overall pick, and the better Kyler Murray started to play, and the more it became clear that Kyler might enter the NFL, all of a sudden, you get the convergence of two or three factors, and you now have to choose to pass on that rookie. Mm-hmm. And the Cardinals didn't want to make that choice, and thank God for that, because they got a better player out of it. The Cowboys are going to be faced with a similar decision, and it is a hard one. I think that if I were in those shoes, I would have extended Dak a while ago, and I still think I would extend Dak now, but they're going to have to make a tough choice, and that's an important thing that we're going to be talking about over the next couple of months.
There's an important detail to iron out with what you're saying, because I don't totally disagree with the structure of the argument that you make, but a top five overall pick is different than getting the first or second overall pick. And I really think that we are headed down a path to where if you're not picking one or two, you're not getting Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence. So like, even if the Cowboys are picking fourth or fifth in the top five, I don't think you're even weighing Justin Fields, because then at that point, in order to get a guy like that to move on from Dak, which obviously if draft weekend would come around in April and they have not re-signed Dak Prescott yet, they are then in all out, we need to do whatever we can to get the number two overall pick as long. But like, they're in a tough crowd here, because I think everybody realizes that the New York Jets are going to get the number one overall pick. Would you say that the odds are pretty dang high? I know that's a very specific amount that I just said right there. Pretty dang high for Justin Fields to be number two. Like at this point, what would you say the number two overall pick is going to be with Justin Fields?
I think it's more likely to not be a quarterback than be a quarterback at this stage.
You really do think that?
Right. Now, okay, if it's me, I think Fields is in the same caliber as Lawrence. So I clearly disagree with kind of how this is being viewed thus far.
All right.
But well, I'm just like reading the tea leaves of the league. I mean, Dane came out with an article this week for The Athletic, Dane Brugler, about how Zach Wilson might be QB2. That tells me, number one, the league's not super high on Fields. And number two, it's going to be messy at QB2. It's going to be Lance. It's going to be Fields. It's going to be Wilson. Yeah. People are going to disagree. And when that happens, think about behind Murray in 2018, Haskins, Jones, whatever. Nobody traded up. Everybody sat and waited because nobody knew who really liked who the most.
That's fair.
See what I'm talking about?
No, that's fair. Like, so I guess the way that I'm looking at it is it with different realities, because let's say that you really want Justin Fields, and let me just finish my point on the first reality. Let's say that you really want Justin Fields, but Justin Fields going number two overall. Right now, we have seven teams in the NFL that have one win or less, which is, I think, still the most in NFL history. We have 12 teams that have two or less wins right now. Two of the most, how do I say this? Two of the teams that have the highest odds to be a top five selection when it's all said and done, it's the Giants and Washington. If either of those two teams get the number two or the number three overall pick or whatever, Dallas ain't moving up with those teams. They ain't trade with Dallas. Hell no.
True. Now,
you know, so like gets a little bit messy if at any point they have to trade up for a quarterback. And how bad do you think Dallas is going to be when it's all said and done? Do we think they're going to be like top three bad? I know the scenario that was painted to us by Darren said top five bad, but I'm trying to envision a reality where if we have a top five and Dallas is like four or five, that at least one of, if not both, of the New York Giants and the Washington football team are not ahead of them, in which that case, they have no wiggle room to move up for probably a quarterback right. That they would need to move up for.
Right. So if you look at FBI's 2021 projected draft order right now for ESPN, they have the Cowboys at five with a 52.3% chance to get a pick in the top five. Right.
Okay.
So coin flip it, they're in the top five. Worth noting that Washington, on their projections, has only a 20% chance. Huh. Washington's got the outright win over the Cowboys. The Giants are third. They have a 70% chance they're in that top five pick. So right now, the draft order per FBI would go Jets, Jags, Giants, Falcons, Cowboys. And right, in that situation, you've got Jets, Jaguars, Giants, all of whom I think are extremely likely to pick a quarterback.
Right.
And then Atlanta,
yeah.
Who has an outside chance to pick a quarterback.
I just think it gets tough with Dallas because I don't think they're right. Going to be quite bad enough to get the quarterback that they would want. But all of this going back to Dak, I think he's still a Cowboy next year. I really do. I think at the very worst, I think they're going to franchise tag him. And people will go like, oh, like the cap goes all the way up if you franchise tag him to $37 million. I understand that, but their books are what they are right now. And I know the cap's going down a little bit, and they're obviously going to have to make some tough choices and face a lot of the decisions that they made over the last couple of years. But that's only $6 million more than what he's currently on the books for now. So it's not like you look at their cap situation as it is today and then have to find $37 million out of it. 31's already on the books. So you're only finding an extra $6 million, which might be a little bit tricky for Dallas given everything that's going to happen with the salary cap. But I think Dak's back. I think Dak is still on the Cowboys next year.
I agree. I mean, I do think that the most likely outcome is Dak, Cowboys, long term. And I think the second most likely outcome is Dak, Cowboys, franchise tag.
Yeah, right. I'm with you
there. But that's why I made the initial point that I did. Right now, at Cowboys 2-5, at 50% chance to maybe get a top five pick, the Giants will be in front of them, the Jags will be in front of them, whatever. With all that, it's still just like an outside thing. But in the situation, in the event that the Cowboys end up holding number three overall, it's going to make it a lot more tangible and a lot more real. That's why I say that like, sure. You have to choose with that pick. You know, the way I framed it, my article is, are we going to be the idiots who pass on Justin Fields? That's what you have to say to
look,
yourself. That choice.
If the end of December, early January rolls around and the Dallas Cowboys are sitting there at either number three or number two, this all of a sudden opens up a giant can of worms of a conversation of what you possibly do. And because, you know, with Dak getting hurt, that was an added wrench to throw in it. That's kind of just this giant projection now. And so that was a very fun question. I think that we went way too long on it, considered we have a lot more to get to, but that was a great one.
It was worthy.
Right. That was one of the good football ones. Thanks to the lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of people will ever get to play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they have joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get us ready for game day no matter how we are watching. Pepsi's a refreshment that you need to power through game day because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi made for football watching. And if it isn't game day and you need a little pick-me-up, we got something for you there too. BuiltBar.com, which is the place that you know you can go to get the best tasting protein bars on the planet. They're also making these little energy packs, these little 1.5 ounce energy packs that you can pop in at any point in the day to give you an extra little pick-me-up, whatever it is you're going through, whether it is right in the morning when you're waking up, you want something right away instead of maybe a cup of coffee. You can do it before or after a workout, before a meeting, before you're going to play a round of golf, whatever it is. If you need an extra little boost of energy, Built Bar has this new product called Built Go. They've got three delicious flavors, which are peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. You can pick from one of those if you go to BuiltGo.com. You can check it out. You can read about everything for yourself, see exactly what goes into them. If you go to BuiltGo.com, use the promo code LOCKED, all caps, LOCKED. you'll get 20% off your next order. So no matter how much you are ordering, you're getting 20% off. Use the promo code LOCK, get 20% off, get some extra energy throughout your day over at BuiltGo.com. All right, next question. Got to get to the next one here. Sam said, if you, this is actually perfect that we're reading this after an ad read. If you are watching, he said, if you are watching NFL Game Pass with a Pepsi and a Built Bar bar that you had to get delivered by DoorDash because you're waiting on a car part from rockauto.com that you paid for with Visa by using and using the money that you won from MyBookie, how big of an ally of the pod are you? Basically, if you're ever in that scenario, you're more worthy of the seat and microphone that Ben and I are right now.
If you're ever in that scenario, you're currently on the podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
What you're saying is being recorded.
100%.
Doesn't matter if there's recording audio instruments around. At that time, you are hosting.
We have tapped into the FBI's resources, and we are actively activating your phone's microphone so that then you are immediately just put straight on the podcast. That's what's going on if you're ever in that scenario. Mm-hmm. Appreciate that, Sam.
Never forget your phones are listening.
We had to get woke in this podcast. People need to be reminded.
We haven't done a your phones are listening bit in a while. I missed that one.
Yeah, we had to keep it going. Jack, well, this is a trade deadline thing. He was saying this on the premium Slack. He said Stephon Gilmore to Cleveland for a one. Cleveland has the money. They have the extra picks, they have a need, and they have a winning window and should get aggressive to do so before they maybe have to pay Baker. Discuss.
We ready to say they got a winning window with Baker?
No.
We ready to go that far?
No.
Yeah, that's my thing is you can go and make this sort of a play for Gilmore if you want when you're certain. But, I mean, the Browns are... If we're going to read into the game against the Steelers and the game against the Ravens, they are the third best team in their division. So I don't think they're ready for that aggressive of a move. Now, should the Browns consider being buyers at the trade deadline? I think yes.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, they have an extra third and they have an extra fourth.
And an extra fifth. I believe they have an extra fifth.
No, because... They have an extra fifth from the offensive coordinator.
It was traded to the Rams. Yes, you're correct.
Yes, no, they got one from the Rams, but then they're trading one of them to the Ronnie Harrison trade for the Jaguars.
Oh, that's what it is. Yep, you're right.
Yeah. Which, so extra three, extra four. The Ronnie Harrison trade is a good example. The Browns should be buy lowers in the secondary. They still need safety help besides Harrison. Corner can be improved upon as well outside of Denzel Ward. I think that it would be prudent for them to be buyers and to continue to make the team better. Those third and fourth round picks especially are interesting because that's like right around high level comp picks, and so you can pull the sort of a thing where you trade a three for a guy on a contract year and then you get a fourth when he leaves, and it's like, all right, that was basically just like a rental, but it worked, you know. So you can do that if you want. I'm just not sure you have enough confidence yet in Baker and that offense to say we are competitors, this is the correct move for us.
I mean, the proposition itself makes sense, what he's saying, because you agree, you just broke down the picks that they have, how it could be advantageous for them to make a swap anyways. They have, I believe still right now, the most active cap space in the NFL. They don't have anybody on their books for 2021 that's free up then that they really need to sign. Olivier Vernon is the big one, but I'm not so sure that they're going to bring him back, so it's almost like they're having extra cap space for this. So Stephon Gilmore, he signed a big deal a couple of years ago. He's on the books for $17 million, I believe, is what his cap hit is for next year. So you'd have to budget for that, but you might be able to get Gilmore, who's just hitting 30, still get some prime years out of him. And look, if you believe that you are in a winning window with Baker Mayfield, I'm with you, Jack. I think that this makes a lot of sense. Not that I really think New England is super keen on getting rid of Stephon Gilmore. I don't know if they're ready to fire sale everything right now. Remember, there's a lot of players who aren't playing for them right now because of COVID anyways, because they opted out of the season. So I'm not so sure the Patriots are thinking that they're in total panic rebuild, let's trade our best player kind of mode. But for the Browns, it can make sense. Daniel asked this one of both of us. He said, top five late night / drunk foods. I did drunk foods.
I appreciate that.
Because I've had a lot more experience in that realm than Ben has. So Ben will probably do this via a late night snack thing. So what are your top five?
Yeah, so I absolutely did it in a late night snack sort of way because
set it up here. Like, what scenario are you in when you are going, yeah, I could use this food?
Yeah, no, and I have a very legitimate, real, and you know, personal scenario because I have insomnia and I very often cannot fall asleep at night. And when you can't fall asleep at night, there's a lot of things that oh, you must be tired all the time. Yeah, but like the other stuff is like I'm always hungry at really weird hours because like I end up eating meals at 2 a.m. because last time I ate was at like 7 for dinner, and then you don't eat and right. then you can't fall asleep and right. all of a sudden you're 1:30 and your stomach's like, hey, if we're gonna be awake, buddy, like let's do this thing.
Let's get some fuel.
Right. So number 5 is cookies and milk because I love chocolate chip cookies. And people are like, oh, cookies aren't that filling. But eat enough cookies and then you'd be filled for sure.
How do you feel about oatmeal raisin cookies?
Wasteful. Stupid. Ridiculous. How dare you?
Oh, boy. All right. Okay. All right.
If there were no chocolate chip cookies, oatmeal raisin cookies would be fine. But because there are chocolate chip cookies, oatmeal raisin cookies are posers. They're hacks. They're masquerading. They're insufficient doppelgangers, knockoffs. They're despicable. 4 is tater tots. Basically anything that is like frozen and microwavable / frozen and then like heat up in the oven, right? Like frozen french fries, frozen tater tots, pizza rolls, right? Anything that like within 5 minutes they can be toasty. That's what we're talking about.
Okay.
3 is toast. Toast is very underrated late night food. It's great morning food, great late night food. Because, you know, nice bread. Ton of butter because you're being a big sad boy because you're up late at night.
I was gonna say, what's really, the ideal topping for like a late night toast?
No, like I'm a big like you get a nice bread, you put a little bit of butter on it, and that's it. And that toast is really really good. I love bread, so that's good. And like very often, I'm drinking like sleepy time tea, and toast goes nicely with sleepy time tea. 2 is a pizza, whether it's you know a frozen pizza that you make in the oven, whether it's leftover pizza. Whether it's just cold pizza that's in the fridge, but pizza is the ideal late night food.
Okay.
And then 1 is the catch-all bucket of leftovers. Leftovers. Anything that is leftovers is ideal for late night snacking because it is already made and it's in a Tupperware and you just eat it straight out of the Tupperware.
I think I'm going to make you be more specific here because I'm not going to say that this isn't a valid answer, but like, okay. Give me something.
Right. So, like, Mare and I made quinoa tacos a couple days ago, and so we got a bunch of extra quinoa in the fridge. So, like, a couple nights ago, quinoa in a bowl, sour cream, cheese, taco sauce, microwave. Delicious. Right? And it just, like, 4 seconds, very, very good. So, like, whenever it's, like, anytime I'm, like, hungry at night, I just open the fridge, and whatever the first thing is in a Tupperware, that's what we're eating. Because it's just
not strong. At that point, no, I'm with you.
It's just consuming. At that point, it's just caloric intake.
Listen, I love quinoa, but I was about to say like that's too healthy. You know, like that's even too healthy for like a late night snack. But you went sour
Put
cream,
sour
you went
cream,
cheese.
Enough cheese on
right.
there,
right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. You saved yourself there because I, like I said, love quinoa, but it was almost too healthy for this top 5. Okay, I did a little bit different. Obviously, been out having a nice night on the town. Had a couple of alcoholic beverages. Now you're in need of some sustenance. You need something to absorb all of the alcohol that you have consumed. 5 for me, something with fries. I don't care whether you're going to Checkers, you're going to McDonald's, you're going to Burger King, Wendy's, don't matter. Something with fries. That is 5. You're ordering a large fry and then whatever else you want. Chicken nuggets, chicken sandwich. Baconator, I don't care. It's got to be something with fries. It's 5 for me. 4 is Taco Bell. And I got to say Taco Bell, and I almost didn't put it on here because I didn't want to be cliche about it, but it's just a fact. Like when you are having a drunken evening and you just like you're craving food, you need to eat something, you want something salty. I mean like that's Taco Bell is the king. It really is. I rarely eat Taco Bell, but the very few times that I have, probably over the last 5 years, it has involved one or more, I won't disclose that, alcoholic beverages. 3 is pizza. Whether it is cold
one
pizza,
plus.
Whether it is cold pizza or fresh pizza. Like you said, like there's a lot of places where You can sometimes go out, and if there's a lot of bars in one area, sometimes there's like a pizza by the slice place where you just go in, just hammer a couple pieces of pizza. You've never been happier in your life. Or you come home, there's some cold pizza in the fridge, almost like that leftovers combination. So 3 for me is pizza. 2 and 1, I'm getting a little niche in what I'm talking about here. Number 2, in Gainesville, yep, Florida, there's a place called Flacco's. It is a Cuban food restaurant that is open until 4 a.m. And let me tell you, my man, I didn't think that Cuban food would hit as hard as it does after a night out at the bars, but holy cow. Now I crave it so much if I'm ever out. And the only place that really does it is in Gainesville. So Cuban food, the rice and the beans, the empanadas that do the everything. It's, you get basically pork.
I'm about to say, this sounds good. This is in home for me.
Dude, it is fresh. It is people who know what they're doing in the kitchen. Phenomenal. Big fan. And then number 1, unequivocally, another niche one, hibachi. Hibachi is the number 1 drunk food. There is a food truck called Two Asians in a Grill, and it is exactly what the title says that it is, that they named the business after. And they park their food truck, well, it used to be outside of a strip club. I don't think it's outside of the strip club anymore. But they would go around and park it basically where people would be after the bars in Tampa. And after I had it one time, it's what I crave every time I go out. Noodles, fried rice, chicken, steak, everything. All of the white sauce, the yum-yum sauce, whatever you want to call it, just basically lathering it on there, giving it another layer of food, and they give you this whole to-go box. It's simply incredible. Nothing like it. Nothing like it. So that's my top 5. We had a little bit different there, but I think that's good. It's good.
Mine was very what's in my fridge centered.
Mine is definitely how much money I can irrationally spend to make my hunger go away. That's absolutely.
Priorities, baby.
That's exactly what it is. Here's another question from the premium Slack. How well do you know your co-host fears? Do you each have to pick the scariest movie you could think of for your co-host? What movie do you choose?
This was difficult for me because I have not seen. What's that?
I don't know your fears. Like, what are you afraid of? I just have fruit. So it's just like a house made
I'm
of
not
fruit
afraid of
with
fruit.
With fruit just like walking around and just terrified.
Fruit is overrated. And that has been mutated into like Ben Hayes fruit.
Okay.
Ben will kill fruit. Ben is afraid of fruit. All right. I was going to say, I haven't seen every horror movie that you can think of. I haven't seen It and then everything worse than It. So I don't like it's very difficult for me to be like, oh, with all of my resources, my knowledge and my experience, here's what I think Trevor would freak Trevor out the most. So I just kind of went off of what freaks me out the most, all right, and assumed that you were as fearful as I was.
Okay, great. Let's figure it out.
I went for the human centipede. To me, that's the most uncomfortable movie idea thing. Why would you ever want to watch this? This is horrible.
Yeah.
Just the idea of sitting through that for 2 hours is just dreadful to me. So now it's dreadful to you as well.
Yeah, I mean, anybody who voluntarily watches that movie and just goes like, yeah, it was a good flick. I mean, like, you're weird. I got nothing for you.
Right. Like when I was in high school, like you know, my buddies were like, oh, watch Human Centipede. I was like, that's not fun. Like,
right.
That,
right.
No,
I don't think scary movies are fun in general. Like when people are like, man, I could go for a real great horror film right now.
Right?
Why? Why? What?
There's a British comedian named Phil Wang who does a bit about how going to scary movies is like the most, it's like the pinnacle of white privilege. It's like, oh, you know what would be fun? To be fearful. Whereas like there's like actually legitimately people
Dude,
in the world
like,
who like
it's
live their lives in fear.
It's the stupidest concept in the world. I don't understand. There are so many of you out there, and I know you're out there, who love horror movies. And look, more power to you. I will never get it. I will never get it. Now, my number one fear, something that you could have said, like paranormal stuff freaks me out. Like the things that I cannot understand of the supernatural or the spiritual, like coming to life or haunting you, like not obviously like cartoon haunting, like Casper the Friendly Ghost or some stupid crap, but like, you know, the weird demonic looking spirit stuff. I mean, like that totally freaks me out the most. That would have been number one for me. I'm changing my scenario for you though, because now I'm changing it to It's a movie, and the setting is you're on the couch, it's late at night, you're watching something, all the lights turn off, like, oh man, you're sitting there, you're trying to figure it out, the power's off, you go over to the breaker, you flip over the breaker, and nothing, you're like, all right, man, I guess just the power's out, it's just me in the darkness. Then you're like, man, I'm kind of hungry. So you walk over to the fridge and you go, man, I might as well eat stuff. I don't know when the fridge is going to turn back on. I don't want it to go bad. And you open up the fridge and you go for some leftovers late at night. And it's just fruit. It's just fruit. It's only fruit.
So I, like, in terms of, like, things that scare me, I don't get got by jump scares, right? It's like, you know, like, you're scaring it, like, staring at, like, the darkness and all of a sudden, like, a face shows up. Doesn't really get me. You know, anything that's like... that doesn't get me. Gore, I'm uncomfortable with, but like I don't think any more than the average person. Okay. What I cannot deal with is suspense. What I cannot do is like I will never watch The Quiet Place. Never. Trevor, look at me. Look at me. I can't do it. Just silence. And jump scare doesn't get me. The moment before the jump scare,
yeah,
when you know the jump scare is gonna happen,
right.
F that moment. Never. No. If I were ever in a horror movie situation, yeah. I would walk into the middle of the field. I'd be like, just come chainsaw me, dude. I can't deal with the waiting. Like, this, I can't hear.
You coward!
Let's just go, all right? Let's get on with it. Go to the next thing. So yeah.
I don't watch scary movies, as we have made clear over the last 4 minutes of us talking about this question. However, I did see A Quiet Place, and that was a good movie. I mean, that's like pretty close to the limit of like what I will do with a scary movie. But it's more, again, suspense than horror or like scary. So, yeah, if you hate suspense, you should not watch that movie. Absolutely.
It's like there's like a pregnant moment, like a violin playing in the background. It's like, nope.
This isn't a scary movie, but have you seen Dunkirk?
No.
Okay. Dunkirk is, I explained it like this when I left the movie theater, and I thought Dunkirk was a fantastic film, but Dunkirk is basically your butthole is clenched for 2 straight hours. Like, that's it. Like, you're white knuckling your seat more progressively, like, as the movie goes on, and then, like, if you don't catch yourself, you'll be, like, holding yourself up by your forearms, and your butthole is just going to be sealed shut because you're so tense.
That's Dunkirk. Don't like it. Don't want it. Let's just watch a happy movie. Thank you.
Okay, back to some football. Adam asked this question. With the trade deadline rapidly approaching, what are 5 trades that you guys want to see get traded and to who? These can be realistic or off the wall, doesn't matter.
Okay, so I tried to be realistic with like 4 of them.
I have 7.
And then the 5th one, I just wanted to make a point. Okay, so... The trade that I firmly believe has to happen, should happen, must happen, I want to happen is Will Fuller to the Packers.
Okay, I have
Packers
that one
have
as
the
well.
Cap to withstand him. Yeah. They have the picks, the trade.
Too easy.
They desperately need an actual speed separation receiver besides Devontae Adams because all their other receivers are just kind of like big guys. Alan Lazard's on IR, so they don't even have the usual 2 receiver. You know what I mean? So Fuller to Green Bay, I think, is a very important trade that should happen. Staying with Green Bay. Biggest issue for them right now is the bargain binning they've done at linebacker on defense. The thing that they need to improve at that position. If the Falcons are selling Deion Jones, if the Jaguars are selling Miles Jack.
Yeah, sure.
2 1-win teams. The Jaguars have obviously sold a ton of talent at linebacker. I'm not sure they would want to sell more talent at linebacker, but in the event that they were to do so, that's where, like, I think Green Bay, with just 1 impact linebacker, solves a lot of their problems on defense. Evan Engram, tight end for the Giants. It was very clearly on the block, though the Giants are kind of like a misrun organization. Nobody knows what's going on. The Baltimore offense has really struggled since losing Hayden Hurst. I think they would benefit from adding a second tight end who has legit receiving chops, more so than Nick Boyle does. Engram also will get to run a ton of seam routes, which I think is his best projection. That's what the Giants are refusing to let him do. And obviously they're going to be able to move Engram around, play him in the slot a ton. I think that Engram solves a lot of the Ravens' issues having lost Hurst in free agency. So I'd like to see him in Baltimore. I brought this up earlier, but the Browns should be interested in secondary talent. If the Vikings are selling either of Harrison Smith or Anthony Harris, I think that both players would be valuable to the Browns. Anthony Harris would be better for them, but I think they both make sense for Cleveland. And then finally, everybody talking about quarterbacks to go to Dallas, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick, Sam Darnold, you know, just trying to give them somebody, give them a little bit of juice. Jalen Hurts.
I mean, that would,
it would,
you know,
never, ever, 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 ever happen because it's Eagles and Cowboys, and it might make the Cowboys better. But the whole point of drafting Hurts is that you find a QB needy team, like the Eagles once did with the Vikings and Sam Bradford, and you take advantage of them. And the Cowboys right now are, you know, have more as many wins as everybody else in the NFC East, and they desperately need quarterback talent beyond Andy Dalton. Jalen Hurts, the quarterback running game, you can make something out of that. I think that the Cowboys are far more likely to trade for somebody like Haskins and just kind of kick the tires on it, see how it feels. But, you know, Jalen Hurts should be available for trade at any given time. That's the whole point behind the pick. So Cowboys right now are that QB needy team.
The most realistic one for me that I want to see happen is also Will Fuller to the Packers. So I had that one written down. I think that one makes a lot of sense. A lot of people are talking about J.J. Watt also going to Green Bay, which I think would be fun. It would also be fun for him to go to Pittsburgh, but that would just be to unite the Watt brothers, and that's obviously never going to happen. Another one that's probably never going to happen that I would just love to see is if the Falcons are, in fact, just fire-sailing everyone, Julio Jones to the San Francisco 49ers. They don't have
can't
the...
trade him. Cannot be done.
They don't have the cap to make it happen, so I don't think that this is possible. However, if they were just dumping dudes off, getting Shanahan to have Julio again in San Francisco would be incredible. But yeah, I agree with you. It's not going to happen. Njoku to the Arizona Cardinals. I thought that was an interesting one that I was reading about a couple of days ago. Njoku has said a couple of times now he would like to get traded. I think Arizona would be a fun spot for him. Get him to play with Kyler. AJ Green, I have to either the Tennessee Titans, if he just wants to go to the Titans to try to win, or to the Eagles, if they somehow have not given up on the season and the division and actually want to be buyers at the deadline. What do you think about AJ Green?
I don't. They have Alshon Jeffrey and they have DeSean Jackson. I don't need any more old injured wide receivers.
But AJ Green's actually been on the field, unlike Alshon Jeffrey.
Right, but like they've kept Alshon on the active roster for 8 weeks now, waiting for him to be healthy. And if right when he finally comes back, they then just add AJ Green, it's like, well, what was the point of this with them? So unless they're getting rid of Alshon, I don't see it. The Eagles, if they buy anybody, it'll be youth. They like, even though they know they have a chance to win the division here, they also know they cannot get older and more expensive. They're already way beyond the tipping point there, in
all
my
right.
opinion.
Tennessee Titans it is for AJ Green. Just get him out of Cincinnati.
Andy Isabella, though.
Just get him
little somewhere. Anthony Miller? Yeah, boy. I would like to see it.
Oh, okay. Those are interesting. I like that. Fitzpatrick to Dallas. I want this one so bad. I want this to happen so bad.
Fitzpatrick has murdered the Eagles the last 2 years.
He
for
is
Tampa
going to
and
throw
then
for 500 yards every game with that Dallas offense. That one actually needs to happen. That one would be incredible. And then I have Ryan Kerrigan to the New Orleans Saints or the Seattle Seahawks. I know the Seattle just added Carlos Dunlap, so I guess probably New Orleans would be more realistic. But get Ryan Kerrigan out of there. Let him play for a contender. Let him get in the playoffs. Let him do it. He's had a great career. Joe at work. So besides the Seinfeld reference you guys had last week, that was Ben and I both saying that we have not seen Seinfeld, so we missed the Calzone reference that... Who is it? It was Mike Florio who was saying that, right?
Yeah.
Given your respective ages, what TV show, movie, or music or overall celebrity is relentlessly joked about on Twitter that you have no frame of reference to? I've never seen a single episode of Park and Rec. So...
Oh, yeah?
Anytime anybody references any of the characters from Parks and Rec, I have no idea what they're talking about. None. That's by far my biggest one.
Right. I don't want to overstate my position here, but I have no idea what anybody is talking about at any given time. And that's the long and the short of it. Like, I'm 23. I was born in 97. I'm technically Gen Z. I'm like not even a millennial. I'm Generation Z. Yes, I know what like a Discman is. Yes, I know what like Napster was and whatever. But when it comes to like any of like
Discman,
it's Walkman. You know what I mean? Whatever, all that stuff. But when it comes to
he
any
said a Discman,
Yeah, this man is a thing.
Okay, keep going.
It's a thing! It's a CD player! What are we talking about right now?
Jesus, Tony, how young is this kid?
I'm not wrong. Am I wrong?
I think you might be wrong. Go ahead, keep going. I'll look it up. Disc Man.
Yeah, with a C. So.
First thing that comes up is Walkman. Disc Man, yeah, portable related. CD player.
Yeah, suck it. Jeez, Trevor, learn about your culture. Anyway.
Now, ain't nobody my age ever called it a Disc Man, I'll tell you that. I will tell you that right now.
Now. But any like movie from the 90s and the 2000s, right? Like any Godfather, Goodfellas, anything that has
anything else with old, a G.
all things with a G. No, like Dirty Dancing. Never seen that movie. Why should I? Like, I don't get it. Why? Oh, you've got mail. That's nice. Sleeps in Seattle. Well, go to bed. Like, Kevin, I don't like Kevin Bacon. I got nothing.
Kevin Bacon,
for all
dude.
These like classic 90s movies, nothing on them. All
right.
So anytime, like, I frequently miss, like, whenever, like, it's Trevor and, like, the rest of the TDN guys, Kyle and Joe, and they're talking about movies and stuff, I'm always just, like, nodding, I'm like, yeah, that's funny. And in my head, I'm like, these are not real sentences.
Andy asked, what is your most controversial football opinion?
Abolish defensive pass interference.
I mean,
take it out of the game.
I mean, we can't abolish it. What are you gonna?
You can call illegal contact, and you can call holding. DPI is ruining defense. I mean, like, I this is most controversial, so I'm going like all the way over the defense.
No, I love it. This is great. This is fantastic. Because mine's not really controversial. I'm just gonna stand in a soapbox and talk about something.
Right. So defensive pass interference protects the wide receiver in the event that he has a play on the football and the defender inhibits him from making a play on the football. That is the intention. What it has become is it protects quarterbacks from making inaccurate passes.
Right.
Now,
I agree with you there.
Right. When a pass is not caught, in the event that the defender was making contact with the receiver, the defender is called for defensive pass interference, regardless of the quality of the football and if the contact was even inhibitory, which is to say, we very frequently see it on underthrown balls because underthrown balls are technically catchable. In the event that the human traveling at light speed could throw on the brakes, stop in an instant, dive forward, and somehow react to a terrible football, right? We shouldn't be giving quarterbacks credit for inaccurate passes, and we also shouldn't be giving wide receivers credit for sucking at tracking the football down the field. These are not catchable passes. If the corner were not there, they would never be able to make these catches, but because they're underthrown, they look like they'd be able to. Meanwhile, corners who have less and less ability to use contact even within the contact window, even within like the first 10 yards of the route, can no longer inhibit these speed receivers to the line of scrimmage and accordingly are always in the trail position and say, oh, you have to turn your head to the football. You can't play with your head to the football anymore. It can't be done. Receivers are too fast. Releases are too easy. Every offense is vertical. It's throwing the ball down the field. You can't play. It's too hard. You're not playing 8 yards off anymore. You know what I mean? So you're not, the you have to get your eyes back is ludicrous. No incidental contact is ludicrous. You should be able to call illegal contact in the event that you drastically inhibit the route beyond 5 yards. And you should be able to call holding in the event that you are in the trail and you are trying to prevent the receiver from getting further downfield on you. You like hook the arm, call that holding. It's 5 yards of first down, or it's defense holding and it's 5 yards into first down. You still get the first down, but we're not getting 45-yard penalties anymore. The Eagles beat the Giants in Monday Night Football exclusively because James Bradbury was called for a garbage defensive pass interference on Travis Fulgham that Fulgham was never going to catch. These were closer to each other than the refs wanted them to be. It's dumb. So I hate defensive pass interference. It's a bad penalty. Offensive pass interference is an equally bad penalty. Commit offensive pass interference. It's great. If you're Julio Jones, be bigger than that dude. Shove him. It's funny and I like it. I don't get rid of this. It's a dumb penalty. It's become something else than what it was made to be. And so you have to reimagine how it's getting called.
I don't know if this is a controversial opinion anymore. I think I just agree with you.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. This is my case.
That's good. Mine is that, you know, the quarterback hikes the ball and there's a receiver in motion that's coming in jet motion. Then he just like tosses it up in the air 3 inches and then the wide receiver catches it. And then they go, oh, it's pass play. It's not a pass play.
Yeah.
We need it. Like, we need it. We need it. We need it. That stop calling this a forward pass. Stop giving this passing yards. Stop giving them receiving yards. It's not a pass. If you are motioning the ball underhanded and it is not going past the line of scrimmage, it is a pitch. It is a run play. These are not passing yards. These are not receiving yards. I don't know. How did we get here? What is the origin of this? Why are we? Because the ball is moving forward? Is that what we're saying? That it's a pass? If you are tossing the ball underhanded and it does not go past the line of scrimmage, this is a pitch. This is a run play.
But it's because, like, the whole point of the play is, like, in the event that you don't get the exchange perfect, it's technically an incomplete pass.
Right.
From an officiating perspective. Right.
Which is bullcrap. Right. Which is BS. If you are running this and you are running the risk of throwing the ball up in the air very quickly to time something, to get it to somebody, let it be a fumble. It's literally just protecting the offense for no reason. Why is it? Why?
Every rule in the entire world protects the offense.
Right. This is stupid. Why are we giving this one also to the offense? They have so many other things. You should not. If you want to run the risk of trying to hit a fully in stride jet motion wide receiver across the line of scrimmage behind the trenches, if he bobbles the football and it hits the ground, make it live. That's a fumble. I don't know, man. I think that unless I'm totally missing a mechanic here that you can't get over, I feel like if you toss the ball underhand and it does not reach the line of scrimmage, this should be considered a pitch and a run play. And then it should also mean that the ball is live. That's my opinion.
I kind of agree with you, but also, whenever I bet receiving props on Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods, okay, I always get receptions because of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No.
So, like, I need the stat, really, is what I need. Yeah. Okay.
So it's just personal gain is why you're disagreeing with
that. That's what everything is, buddy.
Okay, of course. We got a Marvel question in here. What, in your opinion, is the biggest question or questions that you have about phase 1 through 4 of the Marvel movies that will probably go unanswered?
Could Magneto lift Thor's hammer?
I mean, I have on here that could Cap have lifted Thor's hammer the entire time, which you and I have kind of had a conversation and talked about, but we've come to our own conclusions about it, of what, like, kind of like how pure Cap's heart may have been at the time of Age of Ultron when he tried to lift the hammer, and how things might have been different in Endgame. But that's obviously just what we think. We don't know that for sure. I would like to just know that. And I think that that's one. Did you have one outside of the Magneto one?
No, it was, what's the biggest unanswered question? And I just, like, you know, you at the end of Ultron, you just hear Tony and Cap just like, listen, hammer's in the elevator.
Elevator goes up. Elevator's worthy.
Elevator's not worthy.
It might be worthy. Yeah. Might be worthy.
And so that, like, I like, obviously, like, the jokes about Thor's hammer and kind of how the mechanics of it work are interesting. But, like, Magneto definitely is not worthy. But also, is Thor's hammer is metal, but it's also, like, space metal. But also, is it count as lifting if you're not using your hand on it? Thor's hammer basically is the root cause of a lot of my questions about the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
The other one that I had was, I would like to see what happened with Red Skull when he went from Captain America the First Avenger to Vormir. Like, what was that whole process like? That's obviously
the whole Soul Stone, how exactly the Soul Stone judges whether or not you've sacrificed a worthy enough thing is also an interesting conversation.
Right, yeah, that's true as well. Okay, we're going to go rapid fire for these last couple, and then we're going to get out of here. Corbin said, you two are tasked with surviving an Alaskan wilderness for 21 days. You each can bring 2 survival items, 2 entertainment items. What are you bringing?
Okay, Alaskan wilderness, 21 days, 2 survival items. Bringing a shovel and a tombstone, okay? It's not. I am screwed. 2? Can a man get 10? What are we talking about right now? It's not good.
Holy cow, that might be the hardest I've laughed in weeks.
A radio and signal flare, baby. That's my survival plan. I'm bringing a house. I mean, like, yeah, right. It's like fire starter water and like, you know, knife, fire starter water filter. Like, ah, man, that's a very small list. So that's tricky. But then for entertainment, I'm bringing, like, you know, Harry Potter collected series and.
No, just stick with the shovel.
The shovel for entertainment, just in case.
All right, I got four items. I didn't categorize them at all. First one, I've got the top-rated outdoor Ford Bronco. Second, I've got a giant extra tank of gas. Third, I have the entire Night's Watch attire from Game of Thrones. And then good two, call. I have a 21-day supply of beef jerky trail mix, which I looked up and is a thing. It gives you the proteins, the carbs, and the fibers. We are out here surviving. We are warm. We can move. We are mobile. We've got this,
yeah,
baby.
Until the gas runs out.
I said a giant tank of gas was my number two.
Days? You want the heat 24/7?
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
No problem.
Yeah. Giant tank of gas. I did not say exactly how much was there. It is just giant. Shoot. Okay. I got to... All right. Rank these top second-year wide receivers. Terry McLaurin, DK Metcalf, Hollywood Brown.
Metcalf, McLaurin, Brown. You could argue McLaurin over Metcalf. You can't argue Brown above three.
Yeah, I'm with you. If you were granted a specific power to go back in time to show Coach Lombardi one offensive play and one defensive play, what would you show them? I have some sort of four verts Hail Mary with Mahomes just so he could sling it and then somehow complete it just to make him faint. And then the defensive one, I would do what you talked about on Wednesday's podcast with the Rams, a tight front with three down linemen and then three safeties, and then you kind of spread out the rest.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm showing him empty formation, yep. four verts, five verts. I'm showing him running back wheel, something which is a ton of vertical routes out of a spread set. And then, yeah, defensively, I'm showing him, like, quarters coverage. It's going to blow his mind.
This is the last one. This one's from Javal. He said, first off, as a longtime ally of the pod for over a year now, it would be amazing if I could get a birthday shout-out today. Javal, happy birthday, my man. You are always asking us questions on Fan Friday, getting into Watchers of Wednesday, sending in Mock Draft Monday requests. You are a true ally of the pod, my friend. We really appreciate you. Happy birthday. I hope it is an awesome day for you. And then he said, as for questions, which draft-eligible safeties have played well so far this year, asking for a certain team in Jacksonville?
Yeah, safety class has been a weird one so far this year. Was really big on Hampson Asinrodine. In preseason, he has not played super well. We haven't seen Javon Holland out of Oregon yet. Paris Ford playing solid ball before he got a little bit banged up for Pittsburgh. The two guys that I think have really stood out with their play were Andre Sisco out of Syracuse before he got hurt. He was playing as expected in a new defensive structure. And then Trevon Merrick for TCU has been lights out. He's been really, really good. And Merrick was a guy we used to compare and contrast with Sisco, and it's cool to see how both of them are thriving. So Mary stock up and Sisco stock up. I think those are the two guys who I'd be most excited about right now for Jacksonville.
I would agree. And Jacksonville's got, I think, two early second round picks, right? So with Sisco playing really well, but having that ACL injury, there's a good chance that they would not have to spend a first round pick to get a really solid safety. They could wait until day two and potentially get Sisco, which I think is exactly what they need, making up for Jones, who has not been great this season. So there we go. There you go, everybody. That is Fan Friday. Really appreciate you sending your questions. If we did not get to it, sorry. They have been ushered to the aisle of forgotten Fan Friday questions. But as we did last week, that doesn't mean that they are gone for good. Sometimes we will bring up old questions and say, hey, ask us the best ones that never got answered. There's always next Friday. You never know what we are going to pull and what the theme is going to be for next week's Fan Friday episode. A lot of great NFL games coming up this Sunday and Monday. Ben and I are going to be back to recap all of it early next week. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.